Happy New Year, girlfriends. Well, almost. Last day of the year. We haven't had a lot of actual New Year's Eve shows, have we?
I don't think so. No. A lot of Labor Day shows. A lot of Thanksgiving shows.
Right. But, yeah. I mean, certainly we've been within a day or two of it. And right now we're playing with... Apparently there's new licensing agreements. We have our girlfriends who've been with us a long time know that New Year's Eve is the day that we generally play a highly sentimental song at the end of our show. And
you can't even say the name? We're not allowed to?
Well, I don't know. We're checking right now. Kristen is checking right now because apparently the new arrangement here is that...
You get one song a year.
No, you get zero songs a year. You can't play a whole song. You can only play like 30 to 45 seconds of a song, which in terms of this particular song that our girlfriends know, it's like one bite of a cookie. You know, it's kind of pretty, but you want the whole damn thing. So we're working on it. We're working to find out, you know, what that situation is because it's something that... people kind of expect of us on New Year's
Eve.
Who
do you call a resident lawyer?
I don't know. Kristen's working on it. Decker, our crack producer. You're still on crack, right, Kristen?
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
Christmas crack.
Working with our crack engineer, Bob Ferguson, are trying to figure out what the situation is. Anyway, this morning I told Kristen about a life hack. And actually, let's line people up because this is not about life hacks, but about the stupidest thing you did this whole year and whatever it is. And we're leaving voting out of it for either side.
Right.
Just the you had a whole year. You had 365 days. There must have been some stupid stuff that you did.
Now, my standout. Yeah. Call us at 312-981-7200.
Right. Or text us. We can see it there as well.
My standout. Might not be my stupidest, but it's the most recent
okay.
that I can remember, and it was really bad.
Well, let's hear it.
Well, so lots of times I don't like to carry my purse into a store or whatever, so I'll just take out the credit card that I'm using. This is for the market or something, you know, when I go to the market. So I did that, went to the market. I set the card down on the car seat, got home, went to put the card into my wallet, and couldn't find it. You know, really looked hard. And for, I'd say, about 45 minutes, Tom even joined me. Okay, no card. Call and get, you know, a new card. So the next day, I have to go to a market, and I get Tom's card. I haven't even turned my car on when I realized that somewhere between the kitchen and sitting down in the car, I have succeeded in losing his
car. Tom's car.
This is within a 24-hour period.
Wow. No, within a two-minute period.
No, I came back. No.
This is the second one you've lost.
Yeah,
right.
It was, there was an overnight in between.
Okay.
So, lost his card. We go looking for his card. I found it. He goes, that would be the card that I had lost the day before.
Does it say Tom Collinger on it?
No, it says Judy Markey on it.
Oh, he just found a
my card.
Okay. Where?
It jumped out of the car. No. And then, of
Judy,
course,
where was it? What do you mean it jumped out of the car?
It was in the passenger side, way under the passenger seat.
Okay.
But I swear to God, we both swear to God it wasn't there the day before. And then...
Okay.
It wasn't, Kathy.
Okay, I believe you.
Okay. And then I'd say within 3 hours of his having called to get his new...
Card.
Yeah, we found it. It was in the... back seat underneath the thing. So we
there's
found
weird energy in that car.
It's a hungry for American Express cars.
All right, so you both have new cards.
We both have new cards.
Okay.
And
I'm curious, have you only one card that you use?
No, I have a lot of cards, but this
why
is
didn't
the
you
one
use one of your cards?
I did.
The first one, that's the one you lost.
Yeah.
The second card you got from Tom.
Because I was going for groceries, and we split the cost of groceries.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Oh, that's perfectly sensible.
It's very regimented over here.
All right. Well, see if you can top Judy. 312-981-7200. Call us or text us. And you can use a fake name if you're really ashamed of the stupidest thing.
That's a great one.
The stupidest thing you've done all year long. In the meantime, while we're waiting for those calls to begin pouring in, Kristen and I were talking this morning. Some time ago, a couple years ago, we were all encouraged to put in our contacts list ICE numbers, capital letters, I-C-E, meaning in case of emergency. Because if something happened and the police found you in your phone, how would they know? Because your contact, your emergency contact, might not be somebody with your same name. You know, it could be a daughter who's remarried or a girlfriend or a sister or somebody that doesn't have your name. So all they would have to do, the emergency responders, is to go to the I's in your contacts list and find ICE, I-C-E, and the number there. And so I put in two ICE numbers. I put in the number for my son and the number for my daughter, feeling very confident. And the other day, I don't know why I was thinking of this. I thought, wait a minute, my phone... The settings in my phone are set to lock my phone after 3 minutes. So if I leave my phone on a counter somewhere, or if it falls out in a movie theater and somebody wants to go use it, it's going to be difficult because they're going to turn it on and they're just going to get the lock screen.
Oh, you'd be screwed.
Right. So how would the police or the emergency responders get into my contacts to do that? So I figured out a way.
I figured out a way in my head, but if I don't know.
What's your way in your head?
I would make my screensaver my ICE number.
That's exactly what I did. I did a picture, and I went to the original picture and texted in the numbers so that when my screen locks, that somebody can look and go, oh, well, here's the ICE numbers right on the lock screen.
Everybody should do that.
Well, I wonder if I'm the last person to figure that out.
I bet not.
That may, I don't know. Well, 312-981-7200, we're talking about the stupidest thing you did in 2016, and Dan is here to help us out with that. Dan.
Hey, Dan.
Yes, Dan, Lake Geneva. Hi, guys.
Okay.
Yeah, I went to burn a bunch of leaves. We can burn leaves up here at Lake Geneva, and I used gasoline because I ran out of kerosene. And when it went off, I could hear the neighbors' windows rattle.
Did you have eyebrows left?
Yes.
Because sometimes when that happens, it's technically an explosion, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah, it went off good. From now on, I use kerosene.
Why would not kerosene explode the way gasoline would? Did you put gasoline on after the fire had started?
No, I just doused the whole pile with gasoline and then hit it.
So what is the difference between the two?
Kerosene burns slower.
Okay. I can't believe you weren't hurt if it actually shook the neighbor's windows.
Yeah, it went off.
Okay, so if we were to ask your neighbors, what's the stupidest thing Dan did last year? They go, oh, the gasoline on the leaves.
Did he tell you about
right?
gasoline?
Don't do it. I do not recommend it.
All right, Dan, do you have children?
Yeah. No, ma'am.
Oh, okay.
My wife and I are kidless by choice.
Okay. Okay. Well, maybe it's a good thing. I'm not sure about the example Dad would set. All right, Dan, Happy New Year to you and the wife.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
312-981-7200. The stupidest thing you did in 2016, right after this. Stupidest thing you did in 2016? Dan practically set his neighborhood on fire by feeling that his pile of leaves needed a little accelerant. And this is Aileen. Hi, what's the stupidest thing you did in 2016?
Hi, Kathy and Judy. Well, we should say, what haven't I done so
okay.
far?
But this was the best.
Yeah. So I had eye surgery a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And I woke up in the morning and I'm like, oh, my God, I can't see anything. I can't even see my hands, but I washed my hands. I still had the eye patch on from when I was sleeping.
Well, it wasn't a habit. The eye patch habit hadn't kicked in.
Was there somebody in bed with you to hear your concern?
No, my husband had already left for work. My kids were waking up for school, and I'm like trying not to panic.
How can I live my life? I'm blind.
Oh, no, now I'm blind, but okay. Yeah.
You're very pragmatic about it.
Yeah, but that's the highlight of it.
And how's your eyes now?
Oh, I can see halfway, so it's coming back.
Okay, good. All right, thanks, Aileen.
Bye.
This is Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hi.
Stupidest thing you did in 2016.
Well, actually, I'm sure I did many stupid things, but I can't think of any right now. But I'm calling about your ICE number situation with your cell phone.
Right.
My 13-year-old came up with the idea you just push the button for Siri and say, call ICE. And then it will call your ICE number. And if you have more than one, it'll say, call which ICE number.
You can do that when your phone is on the lock screen?
You can, yes. In fact, he left his phone at school one day, and my cell phone rings, and this person says, hi, is this Patrick's mom? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, I have Patrick's phone. He left it at school. So what he had done was pressed Siri and said, call mom. So it does work.
Okay, well, okay, that's interesting, because we're getting a lot of other ones in on the text line. Somebody said that CyberDrive Illinois will let you put in emergency contacts, because you get your license through them, that if the police come and there's an accident or something like that. I mean, that obviously wouldn't work if you have a heart attack in the grocery store. Well, maybe it would, because emergency responders would come for that. They can go to that site and find your information, as long as you put it in there, your emergency contact information.
You mean it bypasses the password?
It's not on your phone. It's not on your phone. They go through the computer. Their computer's in their vehicles.
Who has a computer in their vehicle? I mean,
cops and firemen.
Oh, they.
Yeah, the emergency responder cops. People.
Oh, I see.
This one's for 847. If you have an iPhone, set up the medical ID in the health app. I don't know that I have a health app. What's that?
I have a health app, but it doesn't work. Mine
it says then
work.
If a first responder finds you, or someone just finds your iPhone on
the
lock screen.
I don't know how many steps you took yesterday.
They just type emergency in the lower left-hand corner, touch emergency, and then touch medical ID on the next screen, and your emergency contact numbers come up. So, you know, these are things I never thought about when I was 40.
It's too much.
Well, I mean, it's just things that become stuff you think about.
Well, I think you and I tend to think about that stuff more than others. In fact, I meant to ask you today.
Okay.
Yes. I don't know why this came up.
Yes.
Are you having an open casket?
I'm not having a casket.
Oh, you're...
Yeah.
I should know this. Okay, you're being cremated.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm assuming that my children will honor my wishes and not have people look at me and go, oh, yeah, she was obviously not
feeling
good.
Those must have been old photos we've been looking at a long time.
Boy, no photoshopping on this one. Yeah. I think that's a function, fully a function of age. And I just had this conversation with somebody about a friend who lost a family member who was in their 80s and who also was very heavy. And I just think, and everybody was so shocked.
An 80-year-old man who was overweight or woman.
Should have a heart attack and die. And I don't think it's maudlin. I think it's just realistic. The people you love are going to die. Look at the people we loved who died this year. I mean, the whole Debbie Reynolds story, you said you wanted to talk. We'll talk about that in the next half hour.
Right.
I mean, and certainly people that we thought we knew, but most of these people, many of them, were in their 70s and 80s. I mean,
that's the season.
Right. There's still like 18 hours. I can't believe Keith Richards is still alive. But, you know, when all these other people are dying and that guy is still standing. But when we look at the number of people who passed away this year, well, that's what happens.
Prominent people.
Prominent people, right, yeah.
Because I don't think more people died in 2016 than...
More regular, not famous people.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know.
Of course, they never do a news story about that. Same number of regular folks died as last year.
Well, I think I read somewhere that technically, when compared to other years, there were more dead celebrities this year than other years. Because doesn't it seem like it was every other day? It was like, oh my God, Leonard Cohen, David Bowie, they're just like one after the other after the other.
But Leonard Cohen is not a surprise. David Bowie is.
Well, Leonard Cohen was in his 80s.
That's what I'm saying. Right. Not a surprise.
Right. Yeah. So let's just at least in the back of our heads realize that people we love who are of a certain age are more likely to die.
Than not.
That's our helpful advice from Kathy and Judy. Back after this.
I'm singing in the rain.
Oh,
just
gosh.
Singing in the rain. What a glorious
19.
Feeling. I'm happy again.
19 years old. She spent, I was listening on the way into an interview. She was talking about spending 6 months to get ready for that movie. She didn't know how to dance, learning how to dance. And she was crying under a piano. She was sitting under a piano on set crying.
I heard that.
Did you hear this? And Fred Astaire came by. Said, what's wrong, little thing? And she said, it's too hard. I can't do this. And my feet hurt. And Fred Astaire said, that's what dancing is. It's hard.
You hurt. But he also said, so don't worry. Just flow. Just flow with me. I'll take care of it. Which was very sweet.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, you wanted to talk about mother-daughter stuff.
I did, because it was such a... I would never have thought I would have spent so much head time on Carrie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds as I did this week. And then I saw, because it was posted about three times on my Facebook page, an Oprah Winfrey show. The two of them were on. It was about a 45-minute interview. You know, it was a full show interview. And in the course of the interview, which was ended by the two of them singing Happy Days Are Here Again,
right.
Which was hardly manipulative. Thank you, Oprah's producers. But they talked about there were 10 years in which Carrie did not speak to her mother.
For what reason?
Well, what she said was she had to find herself. And, you know, in Postcards from the Edge, she apparently had a childhood where her mother always outshone her or one-upped her or whatever.
To the very end.
Right. Right. Though I don't think Carrie Fisher has gotten lost in this discussion, do you? Well, in a way, she has in terms of the topic I'd like to introduce, which is I have a friend whose daughter didn't speak to her for 5 years. And
Do you know why?
I don't remember.
Okay.
She was also striking out on her own and just felt that the relationship was holding her back.
Right.
And, you know, there's charged relationships when you're married, but the relationship you have with your parent, each parent, can be extremely, extremely charged.
Right.
And I just thought, I wondered if any of our girlfriends, no matter how long a time it was for, had to go through that, where they were cut off.
It can happen on either side, right?
Absolutely.
Right.
A mom not talking to her child, or a child not talking to her mom, or his mom, or dad.
Right.
You know, is...
So we're talking about parent-child rather than sibs or something like that.
Right.
Right, okay.
Right. Because I don't think you love... The way you love a child, I think, is stronger than the way the child loves you. I just think that that's a natural thing. And
wow.
You don't think that?
Well, now that you say it, Yeah, I don't disagree with it.
I just do. I think, you know, I've never been a big promoter of that phrase, unconditional love. But I...
Because it's so hard.
It's so swarmy.
Right.
But I do think that it's really an anguishing, heart-slicing up thing to be denied access to your child or your parent.
Did the interview that you saw speak to how that ended and how they happened to come back together again? Who made the overture?
I don't know. Maybe one of our girlfriends who saw the interview could recall. I certainly don't recall. I focus sort of on
I mean,
how do you make the
overture
reconnection?
Right. How do you reconnect after you've been dismissed from somebody's life for so long?
I think in most cases it would have to be the person who was the cutter off, or not the cutoffee. I don't know. But our number is 312-981-7200, and it just strikes me that Debbie Reynolds is not the only person to whom this happened, or my friend. And
so in Debbie Reynolds' case, it was Carrie who didn't, it wasn't Debbie Reynolds who cut Carrie off, it was Carrie who cut Debbie Reynolds.
Right.
Right, okay.
Right. And so, you know, I've heard of mothers and daughters, or more than fathers and sons, in fact, where, you know, you don't speak for a while because you have a fight, but each of you is carrying anger.
Right.
But not that I can't talk to you anymore. You won't be hearing from me for a while.
Right. Yeah. That's beyond my understanding. I can understand being mad, but I can't understand in a parent-child relationship either side saying, well, it's done. We're not connecting anymore.
Yeah.
Now, and so. you've spoken to it. Your mom wasn't easy.
No, but we never had no speaking.
Right, exactly. Exactly, yeah. Right.
And never with my father or my father and my brother did that come up.
Right. Well, 312-981-7200, and this is Dave who can relate. Hey, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's going on?
I can relate to 100%. I've got 6 children. I've got 2 by a first marriage that ended in a divorce when I was very young. And did not see my 2 sons, my first 2 sons, for about 8 or 9 years because their mother kept moving every time I made contact. Within a week after I made contact, they were moved. There was no forwarding address, and the only way I was able to trail them was through the school records. When they moved to a new school, I was able to find them out through there. Finally made contact with him. He called me. We got together when he turned 21, which I was elated about. We had a relationship that lasted about 8 years, and things took place that didn't necessarily need to take place. And he said, "I'm done. I'm gone." And I have
What kind of things that took place that didn't need to take place?
Had gone out to California to meet up with him for some time with my then fiance and my son. And he was in the process of getting married, went and met his future in-laws. In the process, he wanted me to go with him over to see his abode. And at that point in time, while we were there, my intended got sick, and so was my son, was sick at the time. And I said, "I need to stay close by them here. We can do it another time." And he got flipped about the whole situation. And that was it. You know, he said, "You can't come to my place. I don't need to see you anymore. Have a nice day." Kind of like, goodbye.
Wow.
And I have reached out continuously over the years. I've honored birthdays. I've honored holidays. I've honored incidents. I've honored whatever you want to call it. I've had his brother has spoken to him, and it still sits out there in left field. I have not had one word from him since then.
And so, that was when he was 21. And how old is he now?
No. At that point, he was pushing 31, 32, somewhere along.
Okay,
and
but
now he's 48 now.
So it's one kid out of six that you're estranged from.
Yeah, and it hurts.
I'll bet.
He was my first son. He was a namesake as well, you know, junior.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so you can totally relate. And a remarkable number of calls that can as well. Dave, good luck, and I hope that's not a lifetime thing. I hope that changes.
Hope it doesn't end like this. Thank you.
All right, thanks. From the text lines, one of our listeners said, I'm afraid this is going to happen with my daughter because she is with somebody who hits her, and we won't have him in our lives. Well, your daughter needs you more than ever right now. If she's in an abusive relationship, so complicated, this love stuff. It's really hard. We'll come back to more of your calls and texts at 312-981-7200. But the mother and child reunion, oh, man. She's only emotional. We're talking about Debbie Reynolds, Carrie Fisher, about their relationship, which wasn't always sweet.
They had a 10-year estrangement.
Right. And
no talking.
And as somebody points out, apparently Carrie Fisher was a heroin addict for about 10 years, and that may have been the 10 years that they were not connecting. 312-981-7200. This is Linda. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Linda.
Yes, hi. My son's a Marine, and he was in Iraq. And he was supposed to be coming home, and the family was going to throw him a party, and he invited me. He lives out of state. And then the next thing I knew, he wrote me a letter and said he never wanted to talk to me or hear from me.
Did he say why?
Well, we did not have the best relationship with his wife. So I wrote him a letter a week later, and I told him, I opened up my heart and says, you know, my heart and my door will always be open to you and your family. So this past May, about 10 years, and he calls me up from the clear blue sky and says, Mom, I'm flying up and I want to see you. And it was the most wonderful thing. And it turns out his wife was with him and daughter. And I did not know that he has post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Okay, right.
I did not know, and they almost got a divorce. And now it is so wonderful to talk to him because he's still in the Marines after all these years. And he's under medication, and he works out, like, I think 6 days a week. And he looks wonderful, and he has a good attitude.
So the estrangement wasn't strictly about the fact that you didn't get along that well with his wife. It was about battle fatigue and everything else.
Yes.
It was all tied in.
Yes, it was all a combination. So,
but you wound up with a happy ending.
Yes, it was a wonderful ending, and he's getting ready to retire from the Marines after 31 years.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Wow.
Yes.
And it's still... How long was the period of estrangement?
Pardon me?
How long were you guys estranged?
10 years.
Oh, man. Ah. And it's still... You can still feel the pain that caused you.
Oh, definitely.
Right.
Definitely.
Right.
Yes.
Wow. Well, Happy New Year to you, Linda. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you very
okay.
much. Bye-bye.
Thanks. This is Ken. Hi, Ken.
Hey, girlfriends.
Hi, what's your story?
Okay, so in my particular instance, my father, he was there, but never really there. Not really doing anything with us. He lived in the same neighborhood. We were watched by his wife, but when we would come around, he would leave. And we were always confused about that as children. And then once we started having kids, well, now he wants to have a relationship. I've allowed him back in my life, and, you know, now he has somewhat of a healthy relationship with my children. But my sister, on the other hand, she was much younger. Nobody was there to watch her, you know, look out for her, except for me and my older brother. And it was hard, you know. And there's things that she'll just never forgive him for. And she does not reach out to him. He's living in Alabama now. So, but one thing that you guys had said earlier about how a mother loves a child, it was
I
your opinion
that...
Right. What brings me back to, have you ever seen the movie The Crow?
No.
No.
And this kind of like, I think about this every once in
Didn't
a while.
Didn't somebody die during the making of that?
Yeah, that was Brandon Lee.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Well, in that movie, there's a little girl and she's just running the streets because her mom's a heroin addict. Well, at one point in time, the main character grabs the lady's arm, and as the heroin is coming out of her veins, he tells her a child's word for God is mother. And I feel that that's true because up until a certain point, you are their world. I have three children of my own, and I try to make every moment for them as easy and as, you know, as helpful as possible. You know, and I know, I feel like that's my responsibility because up until they become truly independent, I am their world. I am their provider. I am their safety, you know, and, you know, they know nothing else but me. And when they look at me, it's nothing but love.
Okay, but you just said, but you're the dad, right?
Oh, yeah.
You're the dad. Yeah. And you said a child's word, this from this movie, a child's word for God is mother.
That's because it was a mother. There was no indication of where the father was, but the child was living with the mother,
okay.
And the mother was a heroin addict. So
okay.
That's why it pertained to that. But it always felt like they always gave me an idea that it's my responsibility when I have children to be that, because that's the way they're going to look at me.
Right.
And looking back as a child, I mean, I have a very healthy relationship with my mother, and you know, I have a very healthy relationship with my children.
Well, you know, that's great. Like, good
well,
for
you're
you.
You're one of the lucky ones.
You are.
No, well, my children are actually the lucky ones. I still have that dad.
there you go.
Okay.
Well, Happy New Year. Thanks for the call.
Happy New Year, ladies.
Okay.
I'm excited about that.
One of our girlfriends sent us a text with a link to a story that says, scientists discover children's cells living in mothers' brains. The new study found these cells, called microchimeric cells, are also found embedded in the brain. What is still unclear is what role these fetal microchimeric cells play in a mother's body. They're similar to stem cells. So that, I mean, somebody else sent a text that said love flows down more easily than it flows up. So the mother and child connection is biological much more than the mother or than the father and child connection is.
There was I saw Fences last night, and this is a scene that's also in the previews where the kid asked Denzel Washington, why didn't you ever like me? And he goes on this tirade.
Right. It was in the
about
play,
you're
right.
My responsibility. You're my duty. Where does it say I have to like you? They didn't even use the word love. And, of course, the child was so damaged by that.
Yeah, and my daughter-in-law once told me that in Japanese, there is no word for love between a parent and child. There are words for respect and caring and nurturing, but love is in that language. And I hope I'm not messing this up, but any of our Japanese culture listeners might be able to correct me if I'm wrong, but that it's not about the kind of love that we think of. Love in that context, in that culture, is a between two adults. It's not between a parent and a child, which I always found interesting. So my daughter from this 815 went through several 1 to 2 year periods when she wouldn't speak to me. She would always be the one to begin communication again. We're back on track, but I remain guarded. A mother's heart stays open to her children no matter what, but with perhaps a grain of sadness, depending on the circumstances. This is Joy. Hi, Joy.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How can you relate to this topic?
My daughter and I went through about a three and a half year period where I could not speak with her.
Why?
You made the choice.
Never, I made the choice. I had to because she was just being, it had gotten to the point where she was toxic. She was an alcoholic, is an alcoholic, wouldn't accept that she was, and it just destroyed it.
Did you go to any Al-Anon meetings?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I just, I didn't, I can't comprehend the thinking of it, but you would have thought, we thought she'd hit rock bottom when she ended up in the hospital for 3 weeks because she was so jaundiced from the alcohol. And, you know, it still didn't hit her. And, you know, it's hard.
That it had to do with what she was doing to her body.
Yes.
Right.
Definitely. Is she in the program now?
No, she is not. She was doing good. And then, you know, she has her relapses. We all know when it is because she cuts off communication with everybody in the family.
Mm-hmm.
So we know she's back to the drinking. It's just, but the trust is not there.
Sure.
You know, that's, it's just something hard to regain.
And the horrible of up and down and up and down. You're always waiting for the next time for the shoe to drop.
It is very much so.
Yeah, alcohol and drugs. I mean, that's a sort of a constant in some of these conversations, whether it's Carrie Fisher or yours or... and outside things that, like the mom who called about her son and his post-traumatic stress disorder and stuff. Because sometimes it's so hard to understand. But
it is. It's very hard when you don't have never been through it, and you know you don't understand the addiction part of it. I don't know. It just it's hard, and it really does ruin a lot of relationships.
How are you going into 2017?
Okay. She's actually at my house at the moment.
Okay.
It's still strained. Very, it's still strained. I see her about once every couple months.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Is she sleeping or something while you're talking about her?
I'm not at home right now.
Oh, okay. She is, but you're not. Right.
Yes, she's at my home, but I'm not. Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Joy, happy 2017. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Old acquaintance be forgot and never.
Is that Julie Andrews?
You mean we can only have 45 seconds of this?
Wow. Yeah, right.
Why
apparently.
Such a tragedy?
Apparently. Well, I, New Year's Eve, obviously, that's today, that's tonight. And I have two New Year's Eves that stand out in my memory. One was at the, what was it called? The Millennium? What was it called when it was 2000?
The Millennium.
Yeah. When we flipped over 1999 to 2000. My neighbor, Linda Kovac, and I, she brought a bottle of champagne. That night, it was balmy as hell. I want to say it was in the 50s that night. And we walked over to the beach at Montrose, which was, several blocks away. And there were fireworks over there. And we... Linda and I just had some champagne and enjoyed the fireworks and then walked home to our apartment on Melrose. It was 16 years ago, 17 years ago. It really stands out in my mind. And then another New Year's Eve. And I would love to hear yours, 312-981-7200. And not necessarily just New Year's Eve that, you wound up in an alley or something like that, but just a New Year's Eve that for one reason or another still stands out in your memory. The other one would have been in the 1980s. No, probably in the 70s. When my husband and I had added a second story onto our house, onto our little Rolling Meadows house, but the second story was still unfinished. We were doing it in stages as our marriage was falling apart.
This will save us.
Yeah, right. This will fix it. Now, let's have another baby. Anyway, we didn't do that. But we decided one year to have a New Year's Eve party up in the unfinished second floor of our house.
Was it an outdoor party?
No, it wasn't in... it was under roof. There were walls and everything. It was under roof. It was just unfinished. And it seems to me there might have been stud walls up, but no drywall. You got up there on a ladder because there was no stairway built yet. So you'd climb up and down to the second story on a ladder. I remember there were probably, I want to say, 8 or 10 couples. There was a lot of drinking. I have no idea where my children were. My children must have gone
further down the ladder.
I knew I had them because I had them within a year of being married, at least one of them. And there was a lot of drinking. There was a lot of food. Everybody brought food. And there was a lot of kissing other people's spouses. I remember that.
Like real kisses?
Yeah, not like, yeah. There, yeah, I remember. And I wasn't the only one who kissed other people's husbands. And I just, that one just stands out in my mind, the climbing up the ladder and up. And it was a little chilly up there because I don't think the heat vents were connected. So the heat that we got came up through the hole in the floor and the first floor ceiling from the heat down there. Anyway, is there one that stands out in your memory?
Well, a warm feeling I have is for New Year's in the 80s when I was married to Tom, that Markey, and we would have people over for lobster. We'd have about 6 or 8 couples, and we did it for several years. And it was just fun. It was like a tradition. That was a really good one. And then the millennium one was I was with Tom Collinger, and a friend.
That was early on.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And you had to, you know, a theme.
Okay. Yes, you're a theme person.
One of the things was you had to bring a video from a movie, you know, a clip from a movie, and we would have to guess whose clip that was.
And that's cute. Yeah.
That was really fun.
Right.
You want to know what mine was? Because I still remember.
Well, I thought that was yours.
What?
Oh, what your movie was.
Yeah,
When Harry Met Sally.
No.
Oh.
It was Body Heat when Catherine, what's her name, is on one side of the door and William Hurt.
Oh, and they're, yeah.
And they're...
Yeah, it was pretty hot.
Right.
Okay.
Panting after each other. And it was warm at the Millennium because then I remember the next morning. So we all stayed overnight, so no one drove. There were a lot of bedrooms in this house. And then I remember the golfers all went off and played golf on New Year's Day in Chicago, Illinois.
Yeah, it was very, very balmy.
Really
it was,
nice.
Yeah, very memorable. 312-981-7200. What are memorable New Year's Eve that still resonates with you from Area 630? New Year's 1990, met my future husband. And this is Linda. Hi, Linda.
Happy New Year, girlfriend.
Thank you. What was a memorable one for you?
Well, the Millennium one was a memorable one for me as well. I am a musician, and I had a gig that night, and it was at Navy Pier, and Bob Collins was there.
Oh, really?
I didn't really get to meet him, but I was just so enamored with him. And if I remember right, wasn't it in 2000 that he passed away?
Don't remember.
Was it 2000 or 2001?
Kristen thinks it was 2000.
So if that was the case, then it would have been within a month or so of his dying.
Right. I loved him, and I've been listening to you guys forever. So it was just a real treat for me, and that has always stuck in my mind.
Did he dance?
That's my question.
He did dance?
I don't think he did, but it was a dance.
Yeah, Bob doesn't strike me as a dancing kind of guy.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a very sweet one. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
Okay.
And Christine, if you're listening and would like to change that information,
yeah,
for us,
let us know. This is Colleen. Hey, Colleen.
Good morning.
What's your most memorable New Year's?
Well, quite a few years ago, I heard on WGN advertised that the cheese drop in Plymouth, Wisconsin.
What is
so
that?
My husband and I.
What's a cheese drop?
They drop an 80-pound block of cheese from the fire engine ladder, brings it up, and then they lower it on New Year's Eve. So they
what town?
Cheese drop.
Plymouth, Wisconsin.
Plymouth.
And it's called a cheese drop, sort of like the ball drop in Times
right.
Square. Okay.
Right. But I was so naive that I honestly thought it would be cheese.
So we drove there.
You drove to Plymouth, Wisconsin.
Yeah, and we got a hotel room, and we scoped out the whole area, and we saw the fire truck there, and people started to gather. And then they brought in this big wooden wedge of cheese. And so they raised
that was it. Painted to look like a cheese.
Yeah. And my husband's like, what did you think? Cheese balls were going to form when they drop it?
Well, if
and
they say a cheese drop, I would think the same thing you did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was fun. We had a great time, but I was a little disappointed there really wasn't cheese.
I don't blame you. Thank you, Colleen.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Happy New Year.
Thank you. 312-981-7200. This is Leslie. Hey, Leslie.
Hey, Kathy and Judy. How are you?
Good. Memorable New Year's Eve for Leslie.
It had to be 2001 going into 02. And it was right after my husband and I had moved from the Chicagoland area to Las Vegas because I had retired and I was going to go into teaching. And they said they need a lot of teachers. So finally moved out there. And we had the best, like, concert weekend that was crazy. There was a Salute to the 60s at one of the casinos, and they had, you know, Chubby Checker, and the opening act was the Ides of March. So we're there, you know, and they announced, you know, after this, it was over. Well, you can also, you know, go meet them if you want to after they're done.
Go meet Chubby Checker.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Jim Peterick was out in the lobby. And I had gone to junior college with him. So my husband said, hey, does she look familiar at all? He goes, yeah, kind of. And he goes, where do I know you from? I go, Morton College, 1969. He goes, oh, my God. It totally freaked him out.
Cute. So that what year was that again? What year was that?
It had to be 2001 going into 02.
Okay, your first New Year's in Las Vegas. Yeah. Is that where you still are?
No, my husband died a couple of years after that, and I moved back here.
Ah, okay, to be by family.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, Leslie.
You're welcome.
312-981-7200. We'll be back with more of your calls about memorable New Year's Eves.
What are you doing, New Year?
Well, now in 2017, I'll probably be asleep by 9:30. But there were years. There were years when I stayed up till midnight, or years that were memorable. And that apparently is the case for a lot of you. This is a good one, Anne. Hi.
Hi.
Happy New Year. Somebody in your family has a birthday.
Well, in 1978, New Year's Eve, I made chicken cacciatore. And I happen to eat most of it with my husband.
Uh-huh.
And it was a real blizzardy 1978 New Year's Eve, really blizzardy. So my doctor called me and said, you know what, let's not take a chance. Just meet me at Northwest Community in Arlington Heights. So it was really bad.
And let's not take a chance that you're going to go into labor.
Yeah, I was a week late.
Ah, okay.
She was due on Christmas Eve. So went in. Feeling fine, at about 3 o'clock in the morning, it's like, oh, I'm glad I'm here because the roads were all closed. And I happened to have the first baby of the new year, 1979.
Oh, how cool is that?
Isn't that great?
At what time?
Oh, she was like 9 o'clock in the morning, but
nobody else. Oh, still the first baby.
Yeah. Well, it was pretty blizzardy.
So maybe somebody was born in a car and it didn't count.
Yeah, I don't think that counts.
Exactly. Well, happy New Year to you and happy birthday to her.
Oh, thanks so much.
Okay, Ann, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. This is Paula. Hey, Paula, what was your memorable New Year's Eve?
Well, this dates back to the 70s. It might have been the same night that there was that birth because it was icy and cold. And I was dating a guy who had a med student as a brother, and his med student lived with six other med students, and they decided they would have a big barbecue New Year's Eve.
Outside.
And they were going to ship in live lobsters and clams and, you know, made me make a little money on the side, charge people to come in. And so when they brought the lobsters and the clams back, they took care, and they also had steaks flown in from somewhere. And they brought the lobsters in, threw them in the back porch, was an enclosed back porch, let them run free.
Oi.
And then they went outside in the terrible weather and barbecued on charcoal grills, these big slabs of meat. And the girls were relegated to the kitchen to catch the lobsters and boil them for this horde of people that were coming in. So that was just a great New Year's Eve for me.
Are you being sarcastic or was it really fun?
I am being sarcastic.
Oh, okay.
So we were working our asses off, catching these lobsters and throwing them in the big pots and then bringing them out in platters. And so the guys were charging, I don't know, $20 a person or something to come in, and we were doing all the work.
Do you think you caught all the lobsters, or did a few get away for a while?
No, we caught all the lobsters, yes. It was an enclosed back porch, so that was nice. We didn't have to lasso them or anything.
There you go. But and you still remember it.
And I
as if it were yesterday.
It.
Exactly.
Yes. Happy New Year.
Thanks, Paula.
You too.
And sure. Laurel has an interesting reason for remembering one New Year's. Hey, Laurel.
Hi, girls. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
You too.
This was probably about 30 or 35 years ago, and there were six or eight of us, young couples. Some of us didn't have any kids yet, and we didn't have a lot of money. We always were on the lookout for a fun New Year's, trying to stay up till midnight with alcohol and food and all that and dancing. And we went to some little bar, I think it was, or little restaurant in Aurora, and food was pretty mediocre, and the drinks after a couple tasted better, but the band was just awful. They played, I think they must have played terrible music. All I can remember is the music is bad, off key, and we all remember the name of the group was the Quartones. And that's the New Year's Day. We had a lot of fun sometimes since then, and a lot of really nice parties. But that's the one most everybody remembers because we danced, but it was
to the bad band.
Yes, it was. They probably were old people. They were probably in their 50s at the time, you know, and played music that wasn't really hip or whatever and off key. And all I remember is we did have a great time, but we do remember that the
bad band.
Yeah,
see, it's really interesting.
Yes.
What little quirky things. Exactly. Laurel, hope this is a good New Year's Eve for you.
Thanks so much.
Okay. And this is Kathy. Hi, Kathy. What can you tell us about your memorable New Year's Eves?
Hi, this is Kathy, and I was a Chicago cop. I started in 87. I was 39 years old, and my first district to work in was Shakespeare in Humboldt Park.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So on New Year's Eve, we'd have to come in a little early, so we'd be out there. And they would tell us that there's going to be a lot of people shooting guns off to celebrate rather than fireworks, so we had to be very careful. And they told us to find a viaduct or something to hide under until all the shooting.
Until the bullets landed.
Yes. So it was, I was in that district. We had 40 gangs from like about 87 till like almost 2000. So,
oh, my God.
Yeah. Then luckily I got transferred to Belmont and Western where it was a little safer.
How long were you a cop?
23 years.
Holy smokes.
Were you wearing a bulletproof vest when you were?
When I was in the academy, we didn't get vests or that. So us old-timers, when we had to get the vest, we would put them on for a roll call inspection, and then they're very uncomfortable. We would just throw them in the trunk of the car.
Rather be dead than uncomfortable.
Well, I always said when it's your time, it's your time. So I know that's not a good saying, but I did make it out to retire and get a nice pension.
Wasn't your time.
Sorry for my partner who's still working because there's not enough cops in Chicago.
Clearly.
And she's got to work alone a lot at night.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that was allowed.
Yeah. So it's pretty scary.
Well, Kath, that's a memorable New Year's, hiding under a viaduct as the bullets came dropping down.
I'm really glad you girlfriends are on because I love hearing you. You're great. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Happy New Year.
Okay. And this is Joy with her New Year's Eve memories. Yes, Joy.
Hello.
Hello.
I want to tell you something that happened to me about 30 years ago. I went out with my husband and some friends and got all gussied up and thought I looked pretty darn good. And we went to a club, and this gal came in that sat at the next table. She was drop-dead gorgeous, looked like Anne Margaret, flaming red hair, gorgeous green satin gown. And I just really felt pretty frumpy. And about an hour and a half later, I went into the restroom and she was there. Her hair was disheveled, her makeup was smeared, and she had thrown up all over herself.
And suddenly you felt glamorous.
I felt good.
Yeah.
That's called Schadenfreude.
Whatever.
You know, when you're happy with someone else's misery.
Misfortune, right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well,
yeah.
Happy New Year, Joy. And
hey,
you look fabulous.
Thank you. Yes. I'm going to see you in Provence.
Oh, you're on our trip.
That's great. And do you know what? Thank you for reminding us. Because
I'm on the list with my daughter-in-law and my granddaughter, three generations.
Oh, what fun.
Oh, that's great. Oh. You know what? There's only five more spaces. I mean, we are almost sold out.
Yeah, it went really fast. So we're really excited to see you then.
Go on our Facebook page and all the info is there, just like you did. And that'll be fun.
How old's your granddaughter, Joy?
She's 26.
Oh, this will be great. Great fun. Well, thanks for the call, and we'll see you in a couple months.
Okay, don't invite.
Oh,
don't invite who?
I'm sorry. That was my bad. I hit the wrong. Maybe we can get her back. I'm not.
Person.
What?
I hope we didn't invite whoever she didn't want to come.
Joy, call us back and let. I'm sorry. I hit the disconnect button. My bad. Back after this. Kathy and Judy back. We're just wrapping up our conversation about memorable New Year's Eves, and this is Barb. Hey, Barb, what was yours?
Well, if you knew me, you would not think this of me, but I've been hosting the neighborhood New Year's Eve party for 18 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Are you happy about that, or are you exhausted?
I'm pretty happy. It started at the Millennium when I wanted my adolescent and teenage children to stay home. So my neighbor and I planned a huge bash that would interest them and all the adults. We rented a hot tub, a huge hot tub.
How do you rent a hot tub?
I don't know. I was never able to do it again. I just found this guy who brought it over on a trailer and hooked it up. I think he just was, I don't know, had a hot tub to rent. I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that was the balmy Millennium. So you had.
Yes, it was. There were kids in the backyard in swimsuits. My daughter welcomed the New Year in with sparkling cider and Fannie Mae sitting in a hot tub.
Oh, wow. And did you try to get the hot tub the next year and he just didn't answer the phone?
Yeah. There was no way I could connect with him. Yeah.
Oh, that's.
I couldn't find anyone else. But my son and his friends strung together four PlayStations in the basement, and we have a huge screen down there, so there were 16 12-year-olds playing games against each other.
Oh, wow. So what's going on tonight?
Well, tonight, it's 18 years later. The kids are all grown. It has come down to, you know, the adults who are older trying to stay awake until midnight,
right.
But it's fun. I mean, it's a nice way to see each other in the wintertime. So.
Well, I'll be thinking of you when I climb between my flannel sheets about 9:30.
That's what you would expect of me, and I would be, except they're all
you're the host.
The party.
There you go. Barb, happy New Year to you and your neighbors.
Thank you.
Okay.
And Joy called in, and she said to not invite the girl in the green dress to France.
Oh, the puker.
Oh
okay. Okay, we have not.
I guess the more things change, a great deal stays the same. I'm Tom Baudet from Motel 6, and we'll leave the light on for you.
Bob picks
perfect
great music.
Bob Ferguson, you're the best.
What happens in the show, one of the mechanics of the show is Bob wants to know what we might be throwing out next as a topic. And then he goes and
finds
with
a perfect bump.
Help, and he gets a perfect, as they say in Radioland, bump. And I said what I wanted to talk about was in this past week or in Christmas's past or future, when you have the holiday at your house, would you prefer that someone stays in the house and gets pretty crowded, or would you actually prefer they stay in a hotel, or if they stay in a hotel, are your feelings hurt? I drove down my street this week and I saw three and four cars that didn't fit in the garages, at the houses. I walk early in the morning with the dog. And so this is like at 7:30. Those people didn't just come over for pancake breakfast.
Right.
They were there.
Right.
And these are two-bedroom homes. So they're not, you know.
So we're talking blow-up bed land.
Right. We're talking, could you please, in my mind, wouldn't it be nice if you went to a hotel?
Well, and on the other side of it, if you're going to visit your parents or your sister or your children in another town, what do you do? Do you wait for your parents to say, we'd really prefer that you stay in a hotel? Or do you say, Mom and Dad, we're dying to come down. We're really excited, but you've got a lot going on. We're going to stay with Tom Baudet. Right.
And it just seems like it can cause, some families, there's no stress about it, and other families, it can cause an enormous amount of stress. If you've got a lot of people in your house and you're saying, this is the last year, we can't do this anymore. It's just too hard to wait 20 minutes for the bathroom or anything like that. And or you just enjoy the cozy part of that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of families, that's fun. I remember when I had the house in Princeton, which I still have, by the
way. And it's a lovely house, and you should buy it.
Yes, right.
Somebody else.
Right. That while there were certainly bedrooms there to accommodate, a dozen people or 10 people or whatever, there were plenty of times when there were kids sleeping on couches and on blow-up mattresses and whatever. And I loved that.
You did.
I loved that.
If
yeah.
any of them have said, we're going to stay at the hotel in town, would you have been hurt?
I wouldn't have been hurt, but I would have wondered what was up with that.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Because it was always fun. This is Jean. What's your philosophy on this, Jean?
Hi. Well, I kind of think it depends on the ages of the hosts, whoever you're visiting. And it has a lot to do when we go and visit our sons and their wives, it's a better quality visit because it's not like we're just dropping in for a few hours. We're actually staying overnight, helping with the children and all that. But there sure comes a day, as Judy is thinking, when it's just nuts. It's not worth it. And I think, you know, Kathy, you're looking back probably to the days when we were all younger and you had young kids and
what was 10 years? You know. I mean, I lived in Princeton from 2005 to 2015.
Oh, so not that long.
No, not that long ago. Right,
but
right.
It just depends on the take. If the person has to have everything in its place and, you know, is just very organized and over the top with control and whatever, and I can really see it both. Boy, I can see both sides of the coin. You
where
know?
Where
well,
are
did
you?
That happen? Yeah. I mean, did that happen to you as a guest or how – I'm assuming
well, most
were
of the time, you know, I am really funny about, I wait until I'm invited, and so I listen very carefully. Are they asking to stay overnight? One son and his wife live in Tucson, and we mm-hmm. live here in Illinois. So, but my husband finally did get a place in a senior park for winter, so he could just go out there and golf endlessly, which was fine. But, and thanks to you media, I didn't go along. I would go and visit sometimes, but I just love living in the Chicago area. There's just nothing more stimulating or more fun. And it's a little boring out there if you don't golf. And I have arthritis, so I don't walk long distances either.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm supposed to stay out of the sun. So I had a lot of strikes against me. But, you know, it really does depend on the situation. And sometimes, I mean, if people have really cranky babies or there's just limited sleeping, it would just be a nightmare. I had a friend recently my age just died of cancer. Just killing me yet. And she had a cat, and people came and stayed with her in Carmel overnight for a week at a time. And apparently her cat went berserk and shrieked all night because the other cat that she was adopted with, her litter mate, died. And I mean, I can't even imagine going to someone's home and trying to manage their health, which was in crisis, and trying to be alert and awake during the day and having a cat shriek all night. I mean, there just are circumstances that
I have my limits.
That's right.
Yeah, that cat would have been off to the vet and it would be goodbye. I mean, you just
you don't mess with Jean.
Jean, you talk about age.
Well, in my way of thinking, too, and this is more true as you get older, if you're not part of the solution, by definition, you're part of the problem. And that goes for pets, too.
Okay, I just want to ask you really quickly, sure. When would you have been able to stay with a friend, forget the cat, but stay with the friend for a whole week, manage their house, manage their life? I mean, is there a certain...
I could have done that. My own husband was dying. They both became ill about the same time, and both the decline was markedly the same time. And she was, 4 hours south of here.
So it wasn't an age thing. It wasn't an age thing. It was a situational thing in your case.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Right. Anyway, all right, I don't sound too crabby.
How late are you going to stay up tonight, Jean?
Oh, I'm a nocturnal person. I'm usually up till 1 or 2 anyway.
Oh, okay.
I take naps in the late afternoon or something usually to tide me over.
Well, so. I take naps too, but I'm a napper too, but I can't stay up.
I've never been an early morning person because with arthritis, it takes you a couple of hours to even get to the point where you're really comfortable walking and doing other things, you know?
Okay, so you go to bed at midnight or 1, and then what time do you get up, 8 or 9?
Oh, no, I don't go to bed at midnight or 1. I go to bed at 2 or 3, and I get up about 10 or 11.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah. You are nocturnal.
Yeah,
I really am. I just feel so, and of course, an arthritic, the medicine kicks in, and you've moved a lot, so the joints are now exercised, and, it's just all good as the day goes on.
Well, happy New Year to you.
Thank you.
Happy smooth New start to tomorrow morning.
I'm 55 years with RA, so that's a long time.
I am lucky to still
be making it around. So okay.
Well, bless your heart.
Well, thank you for calling in.
All right, Jean, thanks. Happy New Year. This is Becky. Hi, Becky. Becky.
Hello.
Hi, Becky.
Hi. Where are you on this issue of stay at my house or a hotel might be nice or I'll kill you if you stay at a hotel?
I would say hotel. Just a little story. I'm from Canada. So we went home to go visit my family, and both my parents live in retirement homes. So we stayed with my best friend and her 3 teenage daughters. Well, we stayed with her and stayed in the basement for one of her teenage daughters, who then stayed on the couch upstairs. They were up all night. No one got any sleep. We actually left a day early so that we could just get home and get some rest before we had to go back for work. So definitely when we go back up there again, we'll be staying in a hotel. It was a great stay except for the all-nighters.
And so how do you make that announcement? Karen, we're so excited to see you, but Bill and I have decided we're staying at the Holiday Inn.
I'm not really sure. I guess I'll figure that out when the next conversation happens.
Okay.
And you know what? You got to remember, that might be perfectly fine with them, with your hosts.
Yeah, it might be.
Right. She might hang up the phone and go, oh, thank heaven. Well, Happy New Year to you, Becky.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Back to more of your calls and texts after this. We're talking about where you're going to stay. Are you going to stay when you go visit?
With them?
Right.
Or in a hotel?
Or are you going to have, or when you're the host, would you rather people stayed at your house or went to a hotel? This is Karen. Hi, Karen.
Hey. Hey, how are you?
All right. Can we come and stay at your house?
Well. Pardon?
Can we come and stay at your house?
Yes, absolutely. Now, I am up in Bangor, Maine.
Oh, okay.
Never mind.
Yeah.
But I was born and raised in Chicago. I've talked to you ladies a few times. I used to go out to your conventions.
Great. So how do you feel about this issue?
I feel absolutely. Okay, so for many, many years, my sister in Virginia hosted all of the sisters, and then as well as our kids, and we all stayed in the house. And I do feel that, like, my kids would look at me like I was crazy because, we would tell the old stories of my sisters. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
My kids would say, oh, no wonder she's so weird and, all of
right.
that. So if you stayed in separate places, no matter, how much room you have in your home, I just don't think that everyone laughs as much. I mean,
oh my gosh, we would laugh so much. And now that I live up in Bangor, I'm going to be 60 next year, and I'm trying to get everybody who's around the country up here for Thanksgiving. So
how many would that be?
Oh, 20, 25.
Okay, and how many beds do you have in your house?
Okay, beds, I have two twins and, you know, like my own big one. But you know what? Come on. I have a couch. I have a sectional. I have floors. To me, I don't know. I guess I'm just still young at heart or something. I don't get it.
Must be. You know, you'd rather have everybody hanging around.
So the chaos doesn't bother you in being at the market twice a day and all of that?
No. Being at the market, did you say twice a day?
That's Judy.
Well,
grocery store.
Okay, yeah, Judy calls the grocery store the market.
Well, I would, okay, but I live outside of Bangor, and for me to go into market, you know, I mean, it would take a little more than just a
quick trip, to the general store.
Yeah.
Up there in Bangor.
Yeah.
Right.
I actually live in Hampton, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I love it up there.
Well, Happy New Year to you, Karen.
And good luck with next Thanksgiving.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Take care, ladies. Love you.
All right. Okay. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
And this is Marianne. Hey, Marianne.
Hello.
Hi. What's your preference, hotel or staying at somebody's house?
Well, personally, I like to stay at people's houses, but having worked in the hotel industry, I love staying at hotels. So when people come to my house, they kind of have a choice. And I don't mind or I'm not offended if they want to stay at the hotel because it's fun and there's other amenities, too.
Mm-hmm. The pool.
So, yeah.
Yeah, like if you definitely have kids and they want to swim, then you just say, well, I'll go hang out at the pool for a little bit.
And no hurt feelings.
No hurt feelings.
Okay.
All
right, great.
You know, and then I think it's great fun. Happy New Year to you.
And to you too. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye, Marianne.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And good news. We got permission to play our song in its entirety. So stick around for our New Year's Eve tradition. Every New Year's Eve, for how long, Jude? How long have we done this?
Trillions of years. We've played this song, and Kathy used to get ribbed a lot because the song is by ABBA, and Steve used to tease her about that, which wasn't very nice. But
we love it.
We do.
Yeah, we love this song. We love our girlfriends. This speaks to it. And to all of us who appreciate the fact that there are friends in our lives for a long time, this is our little sentimental New Year's Eve tribute to them.
Oh,
always makes us a little verklempt. Little verklempt, yeah. Judy and I share a long, long friendship with each other and equally long with some of you. And Kristen Decker and Bob Ferguson and Sam Panyatovich, somewhat newer friends, but we love you all and you're all very valuable.